Hi, and welcome to Jackie Winter Gives You the Business. I'm Lara Chan Baker, and I'm here with my co-host, Jeremy Wartzman.
Hi.
Here at Jackie Winter, our roles put us right in the center of the action, in between client and creative, so we get to see all sides of the process. But we want to see more, so this season, we're venturing outside our own industry to explore how others do it. Everything we see and do and use each day involves production. So together we're going to find out what that looks like for different people and companies, making everything from video games to photography, buildings to software, and all sorts of other stuff. Join us each week as we highlight a different industry alongside a very special guest. As always, it's an ongoing exploration of what the hell we're all doing and why and how we're doing it. This week is all about producing shoes, and I am so stoked to say that we're joined by the remarkable Vanessa Antonius. Vanessa is the co-founder and creative director of the UK-based women's footwear brand Nias, which she launched in 2017. Leading up to that, she spent 8 years as a fashion stylist for Harper's Bazaar Australia and UK, as well as doing freelance styling and consulting. Taking what she'd seen and learnt throughout this super successful career, Vanessa knew that she could create something unique that women were craving. And let me tell you, I've been craving these shoes since she put her first lookbook out. They are stunning, and I've never seen anything else quite like them. They're all made in Italy. The shoes are all about accessible, durable, comfortable luxury. And Vanessa also happens to be the partner of Jackie Winter artist Timber Smiths, and the two recently collaborated to create just the most beautiful printed boot for the new collection, which I definitely want to hear more about. But Vanessa, we're just so happy to have you with us today. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's wonderful. You guys are still in Berlin, right? But you're moving to London again soon?
Yeah, well, I think hopefully we're moving back to London in about 3 or 4 weeks.
But we've been in Berlin. I can hear your accent really coming back in there. You're getting
Oh, really?
Last time I saw you here in Australia, I feel like, you know, I think maybe when you spend time over here, it starts to fade and then you go back and it all creeps back in.
Yeah, it does come and go, definitely.
Jeremy, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's, you know, it's a bit of a strange one recording at this later hour than usual, you know, to accommodate some different time zones. But yeah.
That lovely, you know, UK-Australia feeling... crossover.
It is the best.
All right. Shall we do this?
Let's do it.
So Vanessa, we've got you here today because we want to pick your brains about producing footwear. So let's start here. Can you tell us a bit more about what it is that you do and how and why you got into it?
Sure. Basically, I guess from spending so much time in the industry and understanding the market really, really well, I just felt like there was definitely something I wanted to create, which was unique and which I was craving and which a lot of my colleagues and a lot of my friends were craving. And that was pretty much a women's footwear brand, which had a unique design aesthetic. And for me, what was unique about the design aesthetic that I wanted to create was kind of a minimalist footwear brand with a twist, something interesting about every individual shoe. Also wanted to create something that was accessible, so not a crazy luxury price point, but accessible in terms of an entry-level price point for Italian-made footwear. And that was the other core thing, which was really important to me at the time, which was for it to be made in Italy. Italy is the master of making footwear. They've been doing it for centuries. And what makes them so special is their development of the lasts and heel structures and things like that, which is basically what determines the comfort of each shoe. And other than that, it was those three things that I wanted to join together into one brand and also just make it really versatile and wearable in the wardrobe and for it to have longevity.
And so how many years has it been now?
It's been 3 years.
Three years, which I imagine is quite a journey, and a lot of things will have shifted and changed since you first sort of concepted the idea.
Yeah, I mean, I think the brand has remained the same. There's definitely lots of ups and downs from launching a business. I don't think I quite knew what I was getting myself into when I decided to go on this adventure. But yeah, I think this brand consistency has definitely been there. It's just the collection has grown and diversified as the 3 years have gone on.
And so you are the founder, the creative director, the designer. How much of everything do you do at the moment?
I do a lot. I'm really lucky. We now have a team of about 8 people in different areas. So that kind of covers sales, marketing, PR. We have a design assistant, production help, and I think that's kind of it. So yeah, but I'm very hands-on. I work across everything, the design. I manage the quality control or all those types of things. And yeah, every part I oversee.
Amazing. And I'm just so curious more from a general perspective, like, and how you got into shoes kind of specifically. I mean, that seems like something that obviously requires I mean, it has such a rich history. There's so much to kind of learn. Did you have any kind of backgrounds, you know, specifically in this kind of side of the industry? Or, you know, how did you decide that this was the one that you wanted to pursue and get into it?
It all really came from just having worked in the market for such a long time and just really feeling that the thing missing was footwear. There's so many fashion brands, ready-to-wear brands in the world, and I think there's lots of great ones out there. And same with handbags and jewelry. And you know, I mean, I think there's still other little potential gaps in the market as well. But footwear was really kind of screaming out to me as something that needed attention and that there was definitely something unique that I could create within that industry. So I had a lot of help from one of my best friends at the time. He actually studied footwear in Florence and worked for a footwear brand for about 4 or 5 years. And it just so happened that around the time that I was launching, he had gone freelance as well. So he actually helped me set up the production. We looked for factories together. And then he actually taught me a lot about footwear manufacture and all the technical side of it, because it is extremely technical compared to every other fashion category. So he almost trained me for the first year and kind of taught me everything there was to know. And also our factory is a small family-run factory. So they've been amazing as well. I mean, they're my teachers as well. And I think we both kind of learn off one another, and I teach them about the industry and how it works. And they teach me about footwear development and how that works. So it's definitely been a massive learning process. And I've learned so much over the last few years.
Yeah, I'm really curious to hear more about that process. And that's something we really want to kind of tease out a bit more when we chat. One thing that also kind of jumps to mind is, yeah, just talking about producing in Italy and the kind of what that experience is like. So many kind of, you know, entrepreneurship stories is all about, you know, going to China and kind of getting things produced over there and kind of the challenges that happen producing overseas. But you don't really hear about, well, I've never kind of heard about, maybe because just not my industry, going really kind of to these artisans like in, you know, the home where it's kind of something has been done for, I don't know, maybe even hundreds of years. What was that process like? How did you find that?
Just by talking to people. I think one of the biggest things that I think I read it somewhere when I was launching the business, and I think one of the most important things I kind of read was just start talking about it. Just start talking to people about what you want to do and what you want to achieve, and people will help you. So that's essentially what I did. I started talking to everyone and telling them what I wanted to do. And from talking to people, everyone has someone they can introduce you to help you, or that can help you kind of on your journey. So that's essentially what got me started. It was just talking to the people and then getting introduced to other people. So that's how we came upon our first manufacturer, was just from a friend of a friend's. They introduced us, we went to meet with them, told them our story, convinced them that it would be a great idea, and then we started from that. And we started with a collection of 20 pieces, which they were willing to make, and our first production was only 400 pieces. But they were really supportive of that, and they understood that it was just the beginning and it would evolve into something much more. So it was just one step at a time.
Okay, so now that it's amazing this journey you've been on, and now that you've learnt a bit more about production with the help of all these amazing people and having overseen the manufacturing, can you walk us through the process you guys have now from sort of initial concept for a new design to actually out in the world? We're really interested in those sort of specific milestones that are kind of standard to the footwear industry or to your company now that you've developed these processes.
Okay, so it's quite a long process.
We love long processes.
So I guess the first step is really inspiration and mood. So I do a lot of research, and this kind of happens just anytime, any place throughout between. So once we finish one collection, it kind of starts all over again. So I don't often actively sit down and search out moods or inspiration, but it's just things that come up and I see through my, you know, daily life. Then, you know, eventually kind of after I've had a bit of a break from the previous season, I'll sit down and kind of start sketching out the next collection. And you start building it out very slowly and gradually. And it's a combination of things. It's, you know, some of it, the collection's broken down into like really creative things that you love and that you're really excited about and that you think commercially might not do so well. And then there's the more commercial things that, you know, you feel like there's something, no other brand is doing it, but it's such a important thing or a need that you feel like a lot of people actually need, and lots of other things. And then at the factory, there's a senior developer, and he looks at every sketch with us and we talk about everything. So technically the shoe, for a shoe, you start with the heel design. because that's what the shoe is built on. Mm. So you firstly kind of design the heel, but the heel has to interact with the last. So I'm not sure if everyone knows, but the last is the mold of the shoe. So it's what they wrap the upper of the shoe around, the leather part of the shoe or the fabric part of the shoe that holds your foot in. Mm. And then the shoes kind of sit on, I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but I have to explain this to kind of go back. So the shoes sit on the last for 3 or 4 days generally at the factory, and that's what helps the leather kind of keep its shape. So the heel and the last have to fit together perfectly. So with every shoe size, there's a different heel and a different last. That might have the same design, but the inclinations are slightly different because of the size.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah, it's extremely technical. So this all happens actually later in production, but for the first prototype, we generally work with a size 37. So we'll have the size 37 heel designed. Once we're happy with the design of the heel, we'll then fit it to the last. So just make sure that they join kind of seamlessly around the back of the last. And then from the last, so the last is also what determines the toe shape. So it's all done by hand. So I might have a reference for a toe shape, or I might just talk to the last maker about what type of toe shape I would like. And then we start with one last, and then, you know, they just mold it with sanding it down into the shape that you want. And then we check that by getting a piece of leather and just pulling it really tightly over the last. And that kind of gives you the impression that you would get once the shoe is built. It's quite a tricky process because it's hard to really envision the last as a shoe, because a shoe has the leather lining, the leather upper, and it's quite a thick layer of leather. So the last shape actually changes quite a bit once you put the leather on top. So it's kind of just, you've got to use your imagination a little bit. And that's kind of a skill I've learned.
Yeah, you're having to make some sort of informed guesses, aren't you?
Yeah. I mean, your eye definitely gets trained the more and more you do it, and the more and more you look at it, you start to get a lot better at it over time. So they're the two main structures. And then from that, we start with the pattern. So once we have the last confirmed, we do the pattern, and I or the developer draws the pattern on top of the last. So we get kind of either masking tape or a piece of paper wrapped around the last, and on there we draw the pattern of the shoe. And then once we're happy with that, we cut it out. The team cut it out in leather and construct the shoe, the first prototype. Other than those things, there's also the insole and the sole. So the insole and the sole are shaped using the bottom of the last. So once we've confirmed the last, we also have to make those two things. So there's five components essentially: the heel, the last, the insole, the sole, and the upper. So they're the five things that make up a shoe.
I've never thought of a shoe in that many separate parts. It's always fascinating to me, like the amount of things that you have sitting around you that you never really actually consider that deeply how they get made. I used to be obsessed with that. They're all on YouTube, of like how stuff is made, whatever. They have that TV series. And you would see whatever it is, sewing needles going through the machinery at a factory. And it's just fascinating when you realize that there are people whose jobs it is to really deconstruct these things and make them perfect. How many prototypes would you do for a new shoe?
It really just depends. It depends on the complexity of the shoe. Some shoes can take 5 or 6 if it's something complicated, and then other things that you can get it in the first prototype. Mm. I mean, at the beginning, it takes a lot longer because you don't have any kind of core pieces or core structures to base things on. As time's gone on, you can often say, oh, I want it a bit like this shoe, but different here. So you have kind of a couple of bases and core things that you can build around.
Of course.
It's a lot quicker. But also the design process, you change your mind, you change ideas as the process goes along. Sometimes things don't turn out as you thought they would, and you make changes. So then, you know, the number of prototypes also increase as well.
Of course. God, it sounds mad, but I do need to think about these things more. I'm interested as well. So once you've done the physical part of making the shoe, what happens then? Because then you've got to actually put it in market, right? So I'm assuming you're taking product shots, but also shooting sort of campaign stuff. I imagine, is there sort of editorial? Is there other sort of, how do you actually put it into market?
So basically after the collection is ready, we go to market every Paris Fashion Week, which is where we meet all of our buyers and meet new buyers as well. So we would send invitations to buyers from all over the world and invite them to view the collection in Paris. And then that's where we do our sales. So during Paris, the buyers would come visit us and make their selections. We talked to new stores about distribution, and based on the criteria, which I wouldn't say we have a strict guideline or document which has our rules for distribution in stores, but we talk to every store and then they and we both decide whether we want to go ahead with a partnership. We're very, very careful with our partnerships. We, knowing that we're a young brand and brand awareness is still growing, we are pretty selective just because we want to be able to control our relationship with each store. We want to make sure a successful partnership as well. So the important thing for us is not to over distribute at this point. So after sales, we'll sit down, we'll look at all of our options, we'll select the partners we want to go ahead with. And then that's when we kind of collect all our sales orders and we send the production order to the factory and they start producing. And then at the same time, we'll also do the buy for our e-commerce store as well. So basically, once we put something in production, we order all of our materials and then they start building the shoes. So the production process generally takes about 3 months. And then at the end of the 3 months, that's when we ship the product to the stores. So before
3 months, that's quicker than I thought it might be.
Yeah, I mean, we aim for 3 months.
Maybe doesn't feel like that at all to you guys.
Yeah, we aim for 3 months. Sometimes it ends up being four. But also the industry is expecting things faster and faster and faster at the moment, which is really difficult. Because you just, at some point, you just can't make it faster.
I think we're all feeling that.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's in every creative industry that, you know, people just want things now. So, you know, and there's just a point where to keep the same quality and to keep the same standards, it just can't go any faster. So, yeah, 3 months is definitely what we aim for and what we hit most seasons. Sometimes there's delays, sometimes there isn't. And so in terms of imagery and things like that, we shoot all our products before sales. And then after sales, once we, because some things, I mean, probably 80 to 90% of the collection goes into production. So some things do fall out. So after sales and once we know our production order, that's when we do our bigger shoots, our campaign shoots and all of our extra imagery for the season.
Interesting. One thing I always love talking about with people is just kind of the variety of different kind of tools that they use, especially when it comes to kind of production. Sometimes a lot of that is communication tools and kind of more basic kind of things like that. I'm kind of curious, are there any specific tools that are specific either to your business or your industry that kind of help move things along, like either whether it's how you work with your factory or even if it's something like, you know, 3D printing or kind of other ways of working with kind of three-dimensional form in that way? Is there anything that comes to mind at all?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that there's a lot of things that are specific to footwear development and manufacture. I think there is a lot of 3D printing that is used in the industry, especially for heel making. Also, a lot of the accessories that go on shoes are 3D printed. I think the most specific things are for the heels and for the jewelry, any buckles, any brooches, anything like that. A lot of it is, I mean, I don't even know the names of the programs, to be honest. I just sit next to them and watch them edit the designs with me. The machines that they use to wrap the leather around the last are all very specific to footwear. The whole factory is footwear specific, so it is all tailored to that. And then I don't think there's much else that I can think of, to be honest.
What about in your own kind of internal communications or communicating with a factory that in Italy, is that communication relatively easy to facilitate between them and between your team members as well? Are there any kind of specific tools that you use there?
It's very difficult. There's no specific tools, no. Our factory, I'm not sure if this is the way in other factories, but our factory is very face-to-face communication only. So everything has to be discussed face-to-face. Our factory owner and a lot of the people who work within the factory do not use email. So it's I guess it's a little bit up.
Oh my gosh, not even email. Wow. So you're flying in and out of Italy fairly often, I imagine then.
Yeah, a lot of trips to Italy. I mean, they do operate on text message and phone, but yeah, no, it's very difficult. It is difficult. Like any serious
conversation. It sounds glamorous, but I imagine it's,
You can't have a serious conversation unless it's face-to-face. I think it's the Italian way. They're very big on doing everything in person. So yeah, there's not much.
At least you get to go eat Italian food while you're over there.
Sure, and gain a lot of weight.
Sounds so worth it to me. Okay, I want to get to, actually, this kind of leads in nicely because I want to talk about disaster stories. Now, ages ago, we had Timber, your partner, Jackie Winter artist, on the show many seasons ago, and he, I can't even remember how it got brought up, but he was telling us a story about some of your stock getting sort of stolen off the back of a truck and you having to deal with fakes as well, people sort of creating fake cheap versions of your product. And I want to hear more about some of the challenges that you have to face in this line of work.
I mean, there's many challenges. I'm being very positive today, aren't I? I mean, that's probably the worst thing that's ever happened, to be honest. I mean, I think parcels are intercepted for every brand. And yeah, they're intercepted when the couriers have them, whether the courier is loading them onto a truck at the port or something like that. And there are people that intercept them and steal them, unfortunately. So that's happened to us a couple of times. Also, you know, packages will arrive at stores and there'll be empty boxes in the, you know, in the delivery, and the store will contact us and be like, why did you send us empty boxes? And we're like, well, we didn't. It's really something that's difficult to control. I mean, we have a special security tape now that we use on all of our deliveries, but that's really the most that you can do. You can't control it when it's in transit. You know, you can't travel with every package. I mean, the fakes is a different thing. I mean, that's probably the most upsetting thing, especially for a young brand. I mean, I'm sure the larger luxury brands also find it really frustrating as well. But I think I get upset that we're a young brand and, you know, we're still trying to make our way and people are knocking us off and copying our designs and selling them for cheaper. And I think the most upsetting thing for me is probably more I don't want a customer to ever buy a product that they feel is NEOS that's not. You know, the quality will not be there. The design will not be there. The materials that are used in the product will not be the same. And that, I think, is the most upsetting thing for me. I feel that people buying the product and that know it's a copy will just know, and that's fine. They know what they're buying. But if anyone's being misled into thinking it's an original, I think that's the thing that upsets me more. I mean, there are things that you can do about it, but I think this is probably something that I wasn't quite prepared for and wasn't so informed about when, like I said, when I launched, I didn't really know what I was getting myself into, and I didn't expect all of these things, and I didn't know the legalities of how to prevent them. And so now I think I'm much better informed and I can potentially prevent things happening to the same degree in the future. But I think from what I understand, there's about 2 years where you're allowed to protect a design after you launch it. And I think the copies kind of started a year or a year and a half after we launched it, and it was almost too late, or it was too late by the time we kind of had thought about it. So it's difficult. It's really difficult to prevent that.
It wouldn't have even crossed my mind if I was, you know, starting a shoe brand, which certainly not thinking about doing because I would be terrible at it. But I would not even cross my mind that that's a potential challenge. What are some of the more kind of day-to-day challenges that you deal with in your work?
I think definitely the day-to-day challenge is the production. I mean, I would say it's the biggest challenge. It's just materials being late, materials arriving and not being correct, leather being dyed and it coming, arriving the wrong color. Just general, it's definitely production is where the majority of the drama occurs. Deliveries being late or production running late and things like that. That's pretty much daily life. So the production team do have their work cut out for them, and that's definitely the hardest thing. And quality control, and it's difficult because you want to be able to quality check every single shoe that goes out there with the brand's name on it. And we've just put in place a really good quality control system. But again, it was something that we weren't prepared for, didn't have it really on the early days, didn't need it with the smaller quantities. But once our quantities kind of jumped up to the higher production level, you know, we needed it, and we needed it really quickly.
Well, that's the thing. Does the beauty of working with handmade product is that it's, you know, the quality can be so much higher, but there's also a bigger risk for that, for certain ones to not be of that same quality. You know, when you're doing sort of factory production line, you kind of have some reassurance that it might not be the very best, but it's going to be the same thing, you know? And then when you're working with handmade, there are going to be differences between each one. So I imagine that is tricky to cope with.
Yeah, absolutely. It is the handmade that makes it really tricky. And then it's also communicating that to the consumer and to, you know, the stores that it is actually handmade, and you can't expect that 5,000 shoes are all going to be identical for that reason. So it's just, I think it's just determining what is a defect. Is it, for me, a defect is something that doesn't look visually how I wanted it to look. And if it's a technical problem with the shoe, which determines that it's not comfortable to walk in or it's not or it might, the shoe might break in some way. Because of all our skins and leathers and natural materials, there's always going to be marks and things like that on them, which are natural features of the leather. So it can be a blurry line. And, you know, some things that I don't consider acceptable, our factory might. So there are a lot of conversations that have to be had saying, you know, I don't consider this acceptable. And they're like, but we do. And I'm like, okay, but I don't.
Yeah, I'm the paying customer. So, yes. Yeah, that must be hard.
So the production and quality checking and quality checking the final product is definitely the most difficult thing.
So I want to get back to what I mentioned at the start, which is the collaboration you've done with Timber recently. Tell us, how did that come about? Have you guys worked together on something this kind of big before? How did it all go?
Well, Timber's actually, we haven't officially worked on anything together before, but he's definitely helped me out a lot, especially with Neos, especially in the launch. He designed our logo. He actually came up with the name. I was like throwing names at him, probably really bad names. And he was like, no. And then I remember just leaving the house one day being like, okay, well, you're so good at it. You think of a name. I'm going out. And then while I was out, he kind of emailed me a list of names, and Neos was one of them. And I was like, oh my God, this is really good. And that's kind of how the name came about.
How funny.
And so from there, he designed the logo. I mean, he designed our first website. He designed all of our initial materials and things like that, and kind of set the tone for the graphic design of the brand. So Jeremy, that's why he's been so busy. Yeah, and then now we have a team of people who help with the graphic design, but he dips in and out when I need help and when something's not looking quite right. I'm like, this isn't looking right. What's wrong with it?
That's the key to building a business, is being in a relationship with someone who has, you know, some other part that you need.
Yeah, definitely. Friends and partners. So the collaboration, I really wanted to collaborate with an artist on a project and just add a different take to the collection. And Timber felt like obviously the right one, given our relationship together and given how much he'd contributed to the brand so far. So I basically said to him, I wanted to make some printed boots, stretch printed boots. And I pretty much left the rest to him. I was, I think, quite specific about the colors I wanted them to be, just because for me, fashion and footwear have to be wearable and versatile within your wardrobe. Other than that, I let him take charge of the rest. So the print features a mix of UFOs, dinosaurs, and robots, and
I guess very Timber.
Very Timber, and in his fantasy world. And it kind of broaches topics of extinction and the past and the future and merges them all together into a utopia. So we did some stretch over the knee boots and then some kind of calf height ones as well, and three different colors. Yeah, they're currently in the collection.
How was it handing over the kind of the creative control there?
You know what? It was Timber, so it wasn't so scary. And, you know, we obviously spoke about it a lot and bounced ideas off one another. And so it was very much a collaborative process. So it wasn't like I handed it over to a stranger I didn't know. And I think he really understands me and understands the brand. And so he knew what he was doing.
Were there any technical limitations or kind of challenges to get around when you're working kind of graphically on your materials? Is that something that your factory has kind of worked with before, or how did you approach that?
Well, so I guess the thing I didn't really explain before is that the factory essentially only puts the shoe together. There's other different factories who make the heel, the last, the insole, and the sole.
Oh gosh,
they're all outsourced to different factories. Each factory has their specialty in that sense, and then our factory will make the upper and the pattern. And then they'll check all the components work well together, and technically speaking, and then they'll put the shoe together. So we actually had worked with a printing factory for the print and the fabric, which did definitely have several problems. We originally were printing it in Italy, and it was just way too difficult. I think we went through about 3 or 4 different rounds of trying to print the fabric and get it right. And there were different things that were incorrect about it, from trying to color match it to the print coming out blurry to the print coming out the wrong size. And then we kind of just decided that this wasn't going to work in Italy. My Italian's not the greatest, and potentially it could have worked had we all been speaking the same language, but we just decided we had to print it in the UK. So we kind of scrapped what we had done with the Italian factory and took it to a UK printer who was amazing and had the whole project done in 3 weeks.
Wow.
And this is something we were trying to get right for about 6 months. So just struggling. And I think the Italian factory was just always pushing us to the end of the queue and taking a really long time to do everything. So, and, you know, and looking back now, we probably should have called it quits a bit earlier. And Timber was like, you need to take this to the UK. And I was kind of like, but the fabric was coming from the Italian factory because they also supplied the fabric. So we were just logistically trying to work out how that would happen. And in the end, we just ended up shifting everything to a UK printer, and it was much easier.
Wow. I what I really relate to in all the stuff you've been saying today is like, you obviously learn from each round of production you go through, and there are lessons you can take through to each one. But that doesn't mean that with each thing, obviously, because you're trying to do something new each time, there are new challenges. And yes, there are certain lessons that translate across, but you're still always having to learn something new. And I find that very much with the type of production that we do and really the type of production that everyone we speak to on the show does. And I just think that's just fascinating. And it's probably why we love doing this stuff. And it's also part of why we hate it sometimes. And so I wanted to ask you to kind of wrap things up in all your time creating this brand and developing these beautiful shoes and putting them out into the world, what's something that you've learned that you would pass on to others?
There's a lot of things that I would pass on. I think the most important thing is to be really thorough. Be really thorough with all your research and really early on from the very beginning of the design process is do a lot of research. And I think I'm talking specifically with kind of technical things and new materials and that kind of research is really know what you're doing and speak to the right people and get advice. I think in our industry, there's this thing with time and there's never enough time. So you always push ahead with certain things and certain projects without really thinking them through because you feel like you just have to get it done and you have to get it done quickly. So I think the thing that I'm really learning is to just be patient and be patient with myself and be patient with others and really explore every project in depth before you start, rather than getting halfway through and realizing, oh, I should have approached this from a completely different point of view. I mean, that is the design process at the end of the day, but I think because our industry puts a restraint on time, it's a lot harder to kind of start and stop and start and stop and go down the wrong path. But yeah, you're exactly right. You do learn with every production, with every new technique, you do learn a lot. And I think that my ideas also are definitely influenced by the things that I learned from the previous season. If I've learned a new technique or if I've learned that a particular factory can actually do something like a specific thing, then my ideas are developing more each season from that.
Building upon each thing. I absolutely love that. Vanessa, thank you so much for joining us today. If people want to learn more about you or about Neos, where can they go?
They can definitely go to our Instagram and our website. It's at Neos and the website is just neos.co.uk. And they can also just get in touch on social media on the Instagram or just email me. My email is just vanessa@neos.co.uk.
I am also going to confirm for everyone who's listening to this and wants to go look at how beautiful these shoes are that Neos is spelt N-E-O-U-S. So people can go and do that right now. Although maybe they should listen to the end of the podcast first. Vanessa, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Okay, before we go, here is what's been in our open tabs this week. And just a reminder, as always, to get these links sent directly to your inbox, you can sign up to our newsletter by going to jwg.is/newslettering, or you can head to our website, which is jackiewinter.givesyouthee.biz. All right, Jeremy, kick us off. What have you got?
Like always, I have something incredibly nerdy and very, very specific in my open tabs, and this is no different. This is from it's a forum, actually relates very specifically to two episodes ago with Trent, who was on from League of Geeks. This is a forum on the TIG forums, independent gaming, and it's for this game that I've been playing called Return of the Obra Dinn. I don't know if either of you have heard of this. It's on
Absolutely
Switch.
Not.
It just kind of came out. It's super interesting. It's like, I don't know, maybe it was the conversation with Trent, but I've really been getting into games again recently. And so, yeah, this is a really interesting game where it's kind of like you're on the ship and the whole crew has died and you kind of have to figure out how they die. But the graphic style of it uses this really amazing dithering, which is kind of like bitmapping, a way of kind of breaking down complex imagery. And it's using kind of dots. And in this post, it goes through the details of the developer here. It's like before the game was even launched, like how he kind of developed and refined this technique. And it's such an insanely nerdy post. It was actually posted on hashtag Anorax on one of my other Slack groups. And yeah, it's really cool. I mean, if this sort of thing, if you like games or if you like art or if you like technique, yeah, it's just amazing to see what is inside someone's brain, because it's totally not like my own. So yeah, that's my link
amazing.
Of the week.
Amazing. Very Jeremy of you. Vanessa, what's in your open tabs at the moment?
Well, my permanent open tab is normally the Business of Fashion website. So I get alerts from them every morning, and it's kind of the first thing I see every day. And I often open them and don't read them with the intention to read them later.
So I think, I know that feeling.
I'm not sure if you guys know about the whole Barney's ordeal in the States.
Yes,
I do.
So Barney's have gone claimed bankruptcy, and now there's, I think, two or three bidders who are trying to buy Barney's. One is a group called the Authentic Brands Group, which own Saks and Hudson Bay, and they're considering buying Barney's, or they put in a bid to buy Barney's. And then I think the other lead competitor is Kith, which is a kind of a streetwear retailer.
Kith want to buy Barney's.
Yes. So I think the Authentic Brands Group is kind of leading in terms of they have more money. Kith are trying to raise the funds to buy it. I think they're coming pretty close behind, and everyone is pro Kith because Kith is more wanting to save actual Barney's, the stores, and kind of revive them, whereas the other group is planning on shutting them down and just licensing the name out. So I guess it's a hot topic in our industry because a lot of brands suffered from Barney's bankruptcy. So I'm constantly reading about this to see who is going to come out on top.
I would be fascinated to see a Kith-owned Barney's. It would be very interesting. Well, in my open tabs this week is the only thing that I have pretty much given a shit about for the last 2 weeks, which is Netflix's Rhythm and Flow. Have you guys watched it? I'm guessing you guys have actual lives and don't have time to watch these things. It's the greatest. It's a new competition show from Netflix, which has three judges, Cardi B, Chance the Rapper, and T.I., and they're trying to find like the next big hip-hop star. And it sounds like trash. It's actually amazing. The talent is incredible. And from what I've heard, and of course I've watched like all the after shows, all the interviews, all the journo pieces around it, it seems like the format is incredibly different to if you've got like Idol or The Voice or whatever, where it's a much more kind of authentic, honest process, which sounds like crap, but just watch it. It's really, really good. I bawled my eyes out and started getting really attached to these people, and in the process have found some really, really good new music to listen to. So Rhythm and Flow, bloody loved it. Cannot wait for the next like 10 billion seasons.
Wow.
Alrighty. Thank you so much, everyone. That will do us for now. I'm Lara Chan Baker. He's Jeremy Wartzman, and this has been Jackie Winter Gives You the Business. Our theme music is by totally unrelated to our company, Melbourne-based musician Jackie Winter. You can check out his stuff on soundcloud.com/Jackie Winter. If you want more episodes, archives of all of our shows can be found at jackiewinter.givesyouthe.biz. To receive beautiful artwork, the links to our open tabs, and updates on all things Jackie Winter in one neat little weekly email package, you can sign up to our newsletter at jwg.is/newslettering. You can also find us on Instagram via @JackieWinter, and you can email us any love letters, hate mail, or general feedback at podcast@jackiewinter.com. Told you before, I'll tell you again, we love hearing from you. Remember, this is an enhanced podcast, so if you listen to this using Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Overcast, or Castro, you'll be able to see any relevant visual content as we rabbit on. And if you work for an advertising agency or design studio and you're interested in our live extended version of the show called Open Tabs, be sure to check out opentabs.rodeo for more info. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much, everyone. That will do us for now. I'm Lara.
Thanks so much for having me.
Sorry.
Right, I'll say it again. Thanks so much for having me.